Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The Mexican border city of Juarez lies across from El Paso, Texas. It's home to over 2 million people, whose lives are mostly shared with their counterparts across the border. El Paso and Ciudad Juarez make up the second largest metro area on the border after San Diego and Tijuana. What has set Juarez apart in recent years has been an explosion of violence and murder that brought its bustling tourism industry to a halt. Juarez drew the unfortunate nickname of Murder Capital of the World, averaging 8 murders a day in 2010. Hundreds of women have also been murdered or disappeared since 2013. Another recent drug war in 2018 resurrected the violence. 1,200 murders were reported that year. That level of violence has since waned, but still exists. 1,100 homicides were reported last year in Juarez. Dr. Howard Campbell is a professor of anthropology at the University of Texas at El Paso. He spent over 3 decades interviewing informants, some of whom have fallen victim to the violence or were the perpetrators of violence. Campbell has examined the misguided policies, corruption, and economic disparities that permit the continuation and normalization of violence in Juarez. His account is published in the 2021 book, Downtown Juarez, Underworlds of Violence and Abuse. He tells us why Juarez became a focus for his research.
I guess I would have to start with my love for Mexico, and I moved there when I was in my early 20s, and Mexico absolutely transformed my life. I lived in Mexico City. I came from a small town in northern Idaho by the Canadian border. All of a sudden, I was in the largest city in the world, and it was just so fascinating and so amazing and complicated. And I ended up just staying. I was a teacher in Mexico City, and I was a gringo mojado because I didn't have papers, but I was working as a teacher. And I ended up meeting a woman there, and we got married, and she was from the state of Oaxaca. And so I ended up doing research in Oaxaca for about 20 years. And as probably many listeners know, Oaxaca is a very beautiful place with rich indigenous cultures and traditions. And so Mexico became the focus of my research, but also the focus of my life. And so when I finished my PhD at the University of Wisconsin in 1990, I was offered a job at UTEP, and I came down here. The night before my job talk, I was staying at the Camino Real Hotel, and I had some time on my hands, so I walked across the bridge to Juarez. And at that point, I said, I'm coming to UTEP, and I want to live in El Paso and spend a lot of time here, because it was just so amazing to me that you could live so close to Mexico and be in Mexico instantly, but yet still live in the United States. And so all of a sudden I was on the border, and I learned that the border's so much different from interior Mexico, especially Mexico City, the city that really dominates the country, but also very different from southern Mexico, such as Oaxaca, with all its rich indigenous traditions and culture, and where the indigenous cultures are actually larger and more impactful than the mestizo culture. So all of a sudden, I was on the border in El Paso and Juarez. And little by little, I kind of gravitated towards studying the border instead of southern Mexico. And through the course of teaching at UTEP, I started to learn a lot about drug trafficking and violence in Juarez. And it's not a topic I deliberately sought out. I liked going to Juarez to eat dinner and to have lunch and to walk around and meet people and go to stores and just enjoy the life of the border. But it wasn't a research topic for me so much until constantly there were stories and reports of people being murdered in Juarez and the emergence of the Juarez drug cartel and the killings of hundreds of women. And at some point in the late 90s, I realized I had to study this topic. And so I wrote a book called Drug War Zone, which is all about the culture of drug cartels, and it's about the problem of cartels nationally in Mexico and how they're associated with the United States and how they affect the U.S. And I looked at it definitely with a lens focusing on Juarez and the Juarez cartel. But the focus of this research was really just purely drug trafficking and not so much the other corollary issues like violence. And so I thought I was done with this topic. But then the violence got even worse in Juarez and continued. And so at one point I decided, well, I'm going to write a book trying to explain why Juarez became so violent. And that's what became this book, Downtown Juarez, Underworlds of Violence and Abuse.
In this book, you point out that it is 30 years of work of you visiting downtown Juarez. And other than the parts of Juarez that other people might know and love, downtown Juarez, again, has its own rich cultural history. But you point out in this book that it really is kind of, you call it synergistic violence, and that synergistic violence is sort of a combination of all the factors. When people think of violence on the border, they think it's cartel violence. They think it's related to NAFTA. But you point out that a lot of scholars have sort of narrowed it down to just sort of one topic. You used your three decades of research to come upon your own idea of the causes behind what is behind that violence. So can you describe that theory of synergistic violence for us and how it applies to downtown Juarez?
Yes. I mean, you described it well, that a lot of the scholarship, but even more the journalistic coverage, especially from national and international media that's talked about Juarez, tends to reduce Juarez just to a myth, a place where people are just bloodthirsty killers and you can't go anywhere without being raped and kidnapped and murdered and so on. It's just sort of like this Wild West movie understanding of Juarez. That got in the way of us understanding why thousands of people were being killed there and what the drug business was all about and the relationship between Juarez and El Paso and the relationship between Mexico and the United States and the very complex causes of this violence. So my argument, as you said, is to do away with these one-dimensional explanations, to look at things synergistically, which is to say there are these intersecting explanations, factors, and causes. There's about six of them that I discuss in my book, and you can't really say that only one of those is the ultimate fundamental cause, but it's all of these issues working together and making the problem worse. And so I look at first the United States and our responsibility for consuming drugs, and we all know that's kind of a truism now, that the drug business in Mexico wouldn't exist except for American wild consumption habits when it comes to marijuana, cocaine, heroin, and now meth and fentanyl. If we didn't use so many drugs, we wouldn't need them. Mexico wouldn't produce them. Mexico wouldn't sell them. So a lot of people say, well, the U.S. is at fault because we created the market for the drugs. Now, that's absolutely true, but it's also a very limited understanding. Likewise, the United States is responsible for much of the weapons in Mexico, the guns that kill people in drug violence and in common crime and in domestic violence and what have you. So again, the United States is very much culpable in the sense of allowing the free traffic of guns legally oftentimes purchased in the United States, but they end up in Mexico and kill people. We have to take responsibility for that. We also have to take responsibility for the war on drugs policy the United States adopted about now 50 years ago, which locks a lot of people up, which criminalizes consumption of drugs, even though lots of people do it without great harm to their bodies or themselves. But we use this militarized approach and we blame Mexico, which of course Donald Trump did, and it helped him win the election and become president. So obviously the United States has huge responsibility, to the point where I say we should not talk about Mexican cartels as such. We should talk about American / Mexican drug cartels, because Americans are involved in the drug cartels. They're involved in the drug consumption. They're involved in the trafficking of arms. They work as members of cartel organizations, often in the U.S. So that was one thing I wanted to emphasize, first of all, is that we shouldn't just point the finger at Mexico and say the one-dimensional cause is corruption in Mexico and criminality in Mexico because Mexicans are somehow naturally prone to crime and violence. That's, of course, absurd and wrong and racist. But yet these kinds of very simplistic images and messages and ideas often dominate media coverage of Mexico and of the border and specifically Juarez. And as I say, they're closely connected now to this current election and the positions of Biden and Trump, who are now competing to harden the border, who can be toughest on crime and toughest on immigration and so on. And so now a lot of the American public does view Mexico and the border and immigration issues and drug issues in very simplistic terms. So we need to move beyond those fundamental explanations that are so reductionistic and look at, for example, poverty and the concept of neoliberalism, which anthropologists and sociologists and economists use a lot, which looks at the ways in which capitalistic economies have pulled away from social programs and and supporting the populace and emphasize profit. And the result is, in a city like Juarez, you have hundreds of thousands of young males, especially unemployed, with very little future, and they turn to the drug trade as a way of making a living and having a sense of power and self. And so we need to look at economic factors, the issue of neoliberalism, along with these other issues I've discussed so far. And I'm sorry this is long-winded, but the problem is a long-winded, complex explanation is much better than a simplistic one. And so we also need to look at the role, when we're talking about economic issues, of the maquiladora industry. There's about 300 to 400 factories in Juarez that are considered maquiladoras that are – we also call them twin plants, in which the product of those factories is imported into the United States. At least half the population of the maquiladora workforce, which is hundreds of thousands of people, are women. And these workers are very poorly paid, and they live usually in the worst neighborhoods and the farthest away from the factories in many cases, and they have to travel across the city. And the result is many, many women, hundreds, thousands, have been murdered in Juarez. That's why there started to be this literature and this explanation of the femicides, the killing of women on the basis of their gender. They were killed because they were women. Now, that does help explain a lot of violence problems in Juarez, especially when you talk about certain serial killing-like things that happen in which multiple bodies were found in specific locations in what's called the Lote Bravo of Juarez, Lomas de Poleo, El Campo Algodonero, various others. In those cases, women were actually captured, in some cases used as sex slaves. They were raped and murdered. These are obviously cases of femicides, of misogyny. But the problem, though, with reducing the violence in Juarez to femicides is that about 85 to 90% of the victims of violence in Juarez are men. That kind of an explanation, it helps explain certain acts of violence against women, but it doesn't explain the entire problem of the violence in Juarez. So, again, my point is, let's not look at these things individually in isolation. Let's look at their complex intersection, and that's what I call synergistic violence.
Howard Campbell is a professor of anthropology at the University of Texas at El Paso. He's the author of the book Downtown Juarez, Underworlds of Violence and Abuse. When we come back, downtown Juarez was once the place to party and engage in a variety of vices. It eventually became a hub of addiction, trafficking, and abuse.
In some ways, this downtown setting became like the laboratory for the emergence of, for example, Barrio Azteca, a very major Mexican and American gang that engages in trafficking of heroin and other drugs.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The Mexican border city of Juarez is often mentioned in the same breath as the infamous femicides that claimed hundreds of lives since 2013 or deadly cartel wars. Anthropologist Howard Campbell had previously written about violence in Juarez in the book Drug War Zone, Frontline Dispatches from the Streets of El Paso and Juarez. His most recent book, Downtown Juarez, Underworlds of Violence and Abuse, examines the dark underworld that still exists under a city that's desperately trying to rehabilitate its image. Campbell spoke to many sources in his book, including people who told him that Juarenses are not to blame for the violence. It's the outsiders, the cartels looking to carve out more territory, or immigrant criminals from South and Central America. Campbell says the victims and victimizers inhabit the same spaces and often the same bodies within Juarez.
So what I was trying to do, without blaming the victims of violence, was to look at what are some of the specific causes in Juarez, getting beyond the generalities that I've just discussed. What are some of the problems in Juarez? And there we have to look at the extremely poor neighborhoods on the west side of Juarez and those burgeoning colonias all over it, neighborhoods all over southeast Juarez. And in fact, the majority of the city are formed of what we call colonias or irregular settlements or very poor neighborhoods with bad public services, not very good schools, isolation from the mainstream society, very poor job prospects, poverty, extreme poverty. And especially where I focused, which was in the downtown area, you have these historic neighborhoods like Bella Vista, Chaveña, various others, in which you have very deep histories of poverty and dysfunction involving drug abuse, drug addiction, drug dealing, drug trafficking, and violence. And a lot of this activity was associated with the historic brothel district known as the Mariscal, located right in the heart of Bella Vista, which was the primary neighborhood which I studied in Juarez. And in that setting, it used to be primarily a playground for Americans, especially Anglo-Americans and African-Americans. And I've done research on African-Americans living in Juarez, including in Bella Vista. They used to have their own like mini neighborhood in Bella Vista. So the Mariscal then was this very interesting crossroads, which I describe as an interzone, in which you have people coming from the United States and other countries to Juarez to party, to drink excessively, to use all kinds of different drugs, to engage in sex with prostitutes, females, males, transgender people, what have you. So a kind of circus of sybaritic activity and fun and excess and orgies and, you know, these are things that a lot of people don't like, but largely this activity went on without the kind of violence we see today. People were drinking, they were using drugs, and so on. But it was business, and it was considered fun, and it was considered, you know, this is a sexy, exciting place to come to. People came to Juarez from around the United States. Juarez was important before Las Vegas became a pleasure palace for Americans. And so this was going on. But of course, there's also a dark side to this, which is abuse of women, which is drug addiction, drug dealing, lots of different people coming across the border, bringing back drugs, organizations being formed to traffic those drugs, and then the violence that almost always is associated with drug trafficking in a setting of in which drugs are considered illegal. And so in some ways, the roots of these problems among the local people emerged in these downtown settings in which you had huge amounts of alcohol and drug abuse, violence, exploitation, mistreatment of women. And this became a kind of vicious cycle that was passed on through generations of people because, you know, the location of the border is prime for this kind of thing. I mean, Tijuana today has what's called La Zona Norte, which is a huge brothel district comparable to those in Thailand, let's say. And so a lot of things that used to go on in Juarez go on in Tijuana. In this setting in which you have kind of tolerated abuse of drugs and alcohol, certain toleration of risque sexual behavior and so on, I don't have any big problem with that. My problem is with drug abuse, hardcore addiction, and then the violence that's associated with the trafficking of the drugs. And I would argue that in some ways this downtown setting became like the laboratory for the emergence of, for example, Barrio Azteca, a very major Mexican and American gang that engages in trafficking of heroin and other drugs. You have eventually the Juarez cartel, whose members are from Juarez. The founders of it were not necessarily from Juarez. One was a man named Amado Carrillo Fuentes, who's quite famous now, was from Sinaloa. But the other founders were Rafael Muñoz Talavera from Juarez, and Rafael Aguilar, who was a federal policeman, also from Juarez. So the roots of the Juarez cartel are in the city and to some extent in the Bella Vista brothel district in which drugs flourished.
Well, you talk about this laboratory that is downtown Juarez. You manage in this book to point out several sort of unwitting experimental subjects in this laboratory. Some of the informants that you have spoken to, they in particular are the ones that, as you pointed out earlier, have been unable to rise in society because of economic factors and many other factors that are keeping them down. You have individuals who are bartenders. You've spoken to sex workers. You've spoken with truck drivers who were involved in human smuggling. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of these individuals that you've highlighted in your book?
Well, one of the things I wanted to convey in the book was that Juarez, in spite of all of these problems, much of the city has sort of normal life and people go to school and they work and they have nice homes and they have a good social life and they're not involved in criminal activity and they're not the victims of violence most of the time. It's weird how in a city as big as Juarez you could have these horrible rates of homicide. Last year, 1,200 people murdered, which is more than in New York and Chicago combined. But at the same time, much of the city, the people live normal lives, and they come to El Paso and they come to UTEP, and we go to Juarez and enjoy it and don't have any problems. So you can have two things going on at the same time. You can have normal life, and then you can have this highly criminalized and criminal situation. Now, what I focused on, though, was the criminal side and the way it was expressed and manifested in downtown Juarez. And I'm not saying I'm a saint. I've been to a lot of the bars that I describe in the book for years and years and years and met a lot of people and, you know, misbehaved, drinking too much or what have you. And so I'm not going to say I'm a saint or anything like that. But what I was trying to look at was how you have these relationships and structures of abuse. And my argument was people at the lower levels of the society that were in these bars, that were sex workers, that were petty drug dealers, people that worked in the bars as bartenders and what have you, get locked into this situation in which violence and abuse become normalized. It's an everyday thing. It's involved in their work relationships. Like prostitutes, we know it's a kind of daily exploitation and abuse. But this is also going on in the drug dealing business. The people at the lower levels of it often are the victims. The most common victims of violence in Juarez are low-level drug dealers. These people are living horrible lives because their lives are short, they're violent, and their work relationships are abusive. And this is played out every day in the bars. And so I was trying to convey what that was like. I tried to reproduce conversations, interactions, things I observed, the smell and feel of the bars and the grunginess of it all. And on the one hand, I have to say I enjoyed hanging out in these places. But on the other hand, it was sad to see people just go down the drain. And I'm talking about women. I'm talking about men. I'm talking about Mexicans. I'm talking about Americans. I'm talking about African Americans. We need to look at this and try to understand it. And I think that's why I invoked the concept of the banality of evil from Hannah Arendt, the great philosopher, because I argued in this kind of a setting where violence is and abuse are normalized, then this structure of society leads to what we might call evil behaviors in a way that her theory was derived from the Nazis and how the Nazi system caused regular people to do terrible things. And that's what I would argue would occur and does occur in these settings that I described, in these bars, in brothels and what have you.
Dr. Howard Campbell is a professor of anthropology at the University of Texas at El Paso. He's the author of Downtown Juarez, Underworlds of Violence and Abuse. There's much more to our conversation, and you'll hear it next week. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marian Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.